Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with. Hello, my name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a swimmer, and I love films. I love all films. I love long films, I love short films, I love horror films, I love art films, I love big butt films, and I cannot lie. If you love films, this might be the podcast for you. I tend to agree with Martin Luther King when he said, "People should not be judged by the colour of their skin, but by the contents of their DVD cabinets." I do feel that film plays an important part in all our lives. Most of the memories you might have that mean something to you are probably connected in some way to a film you might have seen during that time. And I wanted to capture that by inviting a dead person over to my house to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. I've got a lot of great guests coming up, including Catherine Ryan, Aisling Bea, Nish Kumar, Stephen Cree, and loads more. But for my first episode, I wanted it to be a special one. But let's face it, they're all special. But it doesn't matter, this guy's special too. My very first guest is the brilliant James Acaster. If you don't know any of James's work, what is wrong with you? Get on Netflix now and look up his 4 stand-up specials. He has 4 of them and they're all incredible. And you should try and watch them all in one go. There's a lot more to say about his career, although I think what I've discovered is it's quite fun to say people's CVs into their own eyes while they're looking at you, because it sort of freaks you both out, which is what I've done with all of my guests. So listen out for that in the episode. A couple of things. We did record this in my kitchen, so it's a tiny bit echoey, but I've learned from that. It doesn't happen in the rest of the episodes. The other episodes, sound is much better, so please bear with it. A couple of brief warnings. There's probably some swearing from time to time, because I do think it's cool and clever, and I do think we might touch lightly on some darker topics. So if you're sensitive to that sort of thing, you can just skip those bits. Also, in terms of spoilers, if we mention a film you haven't seen, we might spoil that film. So you might want to skip ahead. But don't skip ahead too much, otherwise this whole podcast is going to be like 30 seconds for you. That's it for now. I very much hope you enjoy the first episode of Films to be Buried With. Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. I am Brett Goldstein, and I'm here with a very wonderful guest. His name is James Acaster. If you don't know him, you can watch 4 hours, 4 hours of him being a comedian on Netflix, on Channel Netflix.
Yeah.
4 hours. Arrogant, in a way.
Yeah, a bit arrogant.
But I've watched all 4. I mean, he's longer than Braveheart.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, if you've not seen him yet, he's a sort of stand-up that's so good, he makes stand-ups want to stop doing stand-up. So if you're not a stand-up, watch it, and you'll have a wonderful time. If you are a stand-up, just forget it. Anyway.
That's not true.
Here he is, the lovely James Acaster. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brett. Thanks what a lovely coming. Intro.
Thanks for coming around my house.
Yeah, I haven't been here very often, even though I'd count you as one of my friends. Okay. I'd say I've been here.
Okay, that's first time.
Second time?
Could be, second time.
Yeah, you're a secretive man.
Don't invite a lot of people around.
No, you don't.
Doors stay locked.
Yes.
In this house. Thank you.
Very interesting.
Welcome to the show. Now, you understand how it works.
Yeah.
You have died.
Yes.
I'm sorry. How did you die, James?
Probably fell in a hole.
In the street? Street hole?
Maybe in the beach hole.
Oh, wow. Because what, like quicksand or a big hole?
Actually, quicksand's probably more likely.
Yeah.
I've always thought it would probably be quicksand or falling off a building or something. Those are the things that have always felt the most likely.
Quicksand seems legit for you.
Yeah, it would be the kind of thing I'd write a routine about.
Yeah, so as you're singing around. This would play so well.
You always felt like you're singing in quicksand.
And why do they call it quick? It's so slow.
Yeah.
It's
definitely sand, though. It gets everywhere. It's coming in my lungs.
Okay.
Good routine.
Good routine.
I'll do that.
Shame you can't do it because you've died. How do you feel about death? Scared of it? Excited? Look forward to it? What?
No, I don't look forward to it. But I don't think I'm too scared of it anymore. I used to be really scared of it.
Yeah.
And then thought about it a lot. And feel like now, instead of always focusing in on... Because it was focused on death and it's like, oh, we won't have it. You know, we got everything taken away from us.
Yeah.
And you don't really stop to think, why have I even got it in the first place? And it's just quite amazing to even have it. It's like, I don't think I'm owed any of this. It's crazy to have it and to be here now.
So in many ways, your spiritual leader is Mike Skinner of the Streets.
Yeah.
He said everything is just borrowed.
Everything's just borrowed. That album has a lot of that kind of philosophy on it.
Yeah.
It's got a song on there called Edge of a Cliff, is all about, like anytime you feel sad, just to remember how unlikely it is that you're even here. And all the
people that came before you.
All the people that came before you. So that you exist. Yeah. It's really nice. Really good sentiment. So I think that kind of stuff just makes you feel better, doesn't it? If you're ever scared of death and you're like, oh no.
So when you're in that quicksand, slowly, slowly, slowly dying, you'll be at least remember the streets.
Yeah. Are we singing that song?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're part of the routine. We're singing street songs.
Well, that's lovely. Do you believe in heaven or what do you think happens?
I don't think I do. I was raised Christian.
Right.
And I believed in that kind of stuff for a while. And then I probably believed in a heaven and a hell for a while. It wasn't really, even though that idea wasn't really pushed on me by my parents, but I believe in those things, and then I stopped believing in hell, and I just believed, there's probably a nice place you go when you die, and then I guess I kind of stopped believing in that, but I'm agnostic, so if I died and there was an afterlife...
You wouldn't be annoyed.
I wouldn't go, what?
Yeah.
I'd go, this was always a possibility, I guess.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that if there is an afterlife, big if...
Sure.
Then, it's not going to be like anything we human beings have been discussing. No one would have got it right.
No. You think it would be more sort of beyond comprehension?
Yeah, absolutely. We're not going to be able to...
It would be more like Solaris.
Yeah, sure.
A film like that.
Yeah, a film like Solaris.
My brain is can't comprehend this.
Yeah, and what is it? More of a feeling, maybe. Maybe just a oneness.
Yeah.
Rather than an actual walking... I mean, obviously, we'd all like it to be like this, because it's nice and familiar, isn't it? Walking around, but it's everything is great, and you don't. There's no calories.
Well, there's
you don't put
line,
any weight on.
There's a line in Solaris, in the book and the film, which is these astronauts talking, and they say, "We think we're so big and brave and strong because we fly through space looking for answers, but all we're really looking for are mirrors."
They lost all their mirrors. on the flight.
Because in the future there are only mirrors.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to take
an entire space program just to find some mirrors. Everyone's going, you've got terrible stuff in your face, you really need to check before you leave.
What I look like anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the premise of this show is that we talk about 10 films that mean something from your life.
Mm.
And so my first question is, what is the first film that you remember seeing when you were alive?
So there are definitely films I saw before this one, but this is the first one I remember.
Okay.
Because it's my first cinema trip.
Oh, wow.
So I remember being at the cinema and it being exciting.
How old were you?
Between 3 and 5, I guess. Round about there.
And who were you with?
My dad.
Just you and your dad?
Yeah. I went to see The Rescuers Down Under.
Rescuers Down Under!
Yeah. It was the first film I saw.
Very underrated sequel.
I loved it.
It's The Godfather Part 2 of Rescuers.
Yeah, yeah. I really liked it.
Yeah.
And it is a good sequel. I mean, you know, I don't actually remember too much of it now. Like, I remember going to see it. I remember being in the cinema. I can remember, like, what seat I was in.
What was the cinema?
Like, the View.
Do you remember that? View?
No, no. The view from the seat. No, not the... I don't know what the cinema was called. It was in Banbury. But then maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was in Kettering. We were in Kettering, and then we moved to Banbury for a year, and then we moved back to Kettering.
Okay.
But I think it was in the Banbury year, but maybe it wasn't.
Why the Banbury year, may I ask?
Comes back to Christianity again. So my parents, the church they were in...
Jesus was in Banbury.
Yeah, they went, he's around there somewhere. The Banbury cross, that's a clue. Yeah. No, they were starting up another church in Banbury. So it wanted some of the people in the original church to go over there for the transition.
What, like weaning people into...
Just, yeah, get there, make sure everything kind of... Not getting people to go to the church, but just like...
Like a franchise, like...
Yeah, yeah.
That's how it works.
Train that lot.
That's
yeah.
Great.
Actually, I don't know if it was training that lot, but it was like, just be friendly. I don't know, just go over, go to that church for a bit. But it was a very, like, hippie kind of church to work, so I don't... It's not like they were there enforcing any rules or anything. I guess it was just there for... If you need here if you need us. And then no one did, so we went back to Kettering. But yeah, they could probably tell you more information than I could. As far as I was aware, we just lived in Banbury.
Right, well, let's get you... I would like to have your dad on, actually. Follow him avidly on Twitter.
You do, yeah, yeah.
I recommend you all follow David A. Acaster.
Yeah.
One of the most outspoken voices.
That's what he wants on Twitter. So yeah, he would... he'd be great on this. He likes films.
Yeah. So you went to see The Rescuers Down Under and you remember the experience very much.
Yeah, I remember just being in the cinema and how special it felt and exciting. For years after, I didn't go to cinema loads because it was a treat.
Mm.
So, like, I remember going to see Bowfinger. I remember going to see Cool Runnings, The Lion King. Wow. So, like, one day my mum, it was really, like, it was a really special cinema trip when one day my mum just went, do you want to go see Stargate? And that didn't happen. Usually, it was like all of us went.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time, even less because even though the first time it was me on my own, but it's because my brother and sister were too young. But like, normally, we all went as a family and we knew a few days in advance we're going to the cinema in the weekend and it was exciting. It was Stargate, my mum just being like, do you want to go and see something like right now? Just want to go, just me and you, she was going to see it. And like, I couldn't believe it was happening that we were going to go, just going to go to the cinema.
That's how much you like Kurt Russell and James Bader.
Yeah, I was like, what? And
got to go down.
It's so good. And also, that was during a phase where I went through where every time I saw a film, I would tell people the whole plot when I got home. I'd have to tell them from the start and I wouldn't miss anything out. I remember my mum having to tell me to stop halfway through Independence Day. Like, we got home and trying to tell her and her friend, had a friend over. And I was just telling them the whole film. And when I got to the bit where all the people on top of the building welcoming aliens and the spaceship comes over and it opens up, I said, hey, it opens up. And then one of the ladies says, it's so pretty. Yeah. And then my mum was like, James, how much of this film is... Because, like...
How far are we into it?
You can't
25
tell us,
minutes.
You can't tell us the whole film. Like, and I was like, oh, okay, fine.
Can you, in under a minute, tell me the entire plot of The Rescuers Down Under?
Some mice go to rescue someone in Australia.
Yeah.
And they ride on the back of an albatross, I think. And that is all I can remember.
That's the plot.
Yeah.
Well done.
But, like, I then went back and watched The Rescuers. You know, I can't remember what happened there either. But, like, I liked that. I remember that one, The Rescuers, Five All Goes West, but also An American Tale. And the Land Before Time films.
Mm.
Being all around that point, I was watching that kind of film a lot. And they were all quite sad. Sad cartoons about being lost.
Yeah. American Tale is unbelievably tragic.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. That's as sad as fucking Dumbo's mum swinging Dumbo. Jesus.
Yeah.
Can't even talk about it.
Yeah. It's all, so it's very kind of... I think also quite sort of Bambi or Dumbo, sad but like still kind of happy kids films. I definitely like American Tail and Land Before Time. Just very sad, like they're so just kids being lost and walking around, and it's what I thought most cartoons were like at one point, because that's mainly what I was watching.
Did you relate to that? Were you like, I'm like a little lost dinosaur?
I didn't feel like a little lost dinosaur. I felt quite like, I definitely felt scared of being a lost dinosaur. I've always been more scared of stuff that's never happened to me.
Right.
So I definitely scared watching those films about, oh, that might, I hope that never happens to me. I hope I never am a lost dinosaur. You know, I hope I'm never like, you know, so, but what I liked about it.
I hope I'm never a mouse in America in the wrong city.
Yeah. Which could happen.
Could happen.
That's still open. But, like, what I liked about Land Before Time, and I think American Tail, I can't remember, but Land Before Time was great because they kept on meeting more dinosaurs who were lost.
Yeah.
So the gang got bigger. And I liked that. I liked all the different characters and their different things and how they were all together in this group and lost together. I quite liked the idea of that. Mm. So, in a way, I was scared of it, but there's another part of me that was like, I would like to be in this lost kind of gang.
I think it's a metaphor for the comedy community.
Yeah, little lost gang. Yeah.
Lost dinosaurs that found each other.
Yeah.
Making our way towards quicksand.
I think that's perfectly fair.
Yeah.
Bunch of oddballs have all got lost, just drifting around, and then you all get drawn to this thing.
Somewhere out there, and then someone else joins in, you go,
this tuba starts singing. But, like, yeah, the open mic circuit, especially when you're in the open mic circuit, it's a rogues gallery of
lost dinosaurs.
You're all just, no matter what, there's no cool people on the open mic circuit. Even the ones who think they're cool. You know, for whatever reason, you started taking yourself to pubs most nights of the week, going to a little room where, like, about five strangers are sitting down to watch you and getting up in front of them and doing something you're no good at yet.
Yeah.
And kind of just taking a hit each night, not knowing if it's going to be good or not. Being really nervous, going up there. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. When it doesn't, it feels brutal. And then, like, just going home. You know, you don't do it unless... You know, I was 23. I had tried to be in bands. They'd all failed. I didn't have any qualifications. I didn't know what to do. And I just started doing this. And definitely, even though it was, like, a fun adventure, I was really, like, I don't know what I'm doing.
No.
And, like, you know, and you meet people like, you know, some of my early friends in comedy, like Nick Helm, Josh Whittacombe, you know, Nick had been writing plays and stuff and got frustrated trying to get other people, you know, directing and trying to get other people to care about the plays. Started doing comedy on his own. Josh had been trying to write and do comedy writing and no one wanted any of his stuff, and so he started doing comedy, doing stand-up, and, like, you know, it was all a bunch of that kind of...
I'd been people. Acting and writing plays, and in fact I was thinking, I took a play to Edinburgh that, like, before I did stand-up, I took a play and it was, like, real... my soul in a play, real heart and soul in a play about relationships. Yeah. And the first review we got was a one-star review that said the plot of the play and then said, who cares? I want to put that on all my posters.
Yeah.
What is the film that scared you the most in your whole life? Doesn't have to be when you were a kid.
No. Easy. Well, it wasn't when I was a kid. Cause when I was a kid, I didn't really watch scary films. When I was... 14, 15, yeah. I watched Scream 2.
Great film.
And I didn't sleep for 2 weeks. And that is not an exaggeration.
That's what the 2 stands for.
Yeah, yeah. I literally could not sleep because I was terrified. And the reason why I was so terrified was, well, for one, I'd never seen a film that was that violent before.
Yeah.
But also, I'd seen, like, murder mysteries and stuff like that on TV and scary films that make you jump a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there was always a really clear motive at the end. You'd always find out who the killer was, who the murderer was, and you'd go, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's why they did it. So, like that. Scream 2 is just like, they're just psychopaths, and they kill everyone.
It's Timothy Oliphant, isn't it? From Deadwood. He's the killer in Scream 2. Spoiler, sorry.
Yeah, so I don't really know his name.
Right.
But, like, there's two killers at the end of Scream 2. One of them has kind of a motive that you kind of understand, and one of them is just a psycho who wants to kill people. And that's all it is. And so when I realised, oh, it's not always a motive. It's not like you have to have wronged someone or something like that. It could just be someone who just wants to kill people. And that hadn't entered my head until that point. And then I was like, anyone, for no reason, could just kill me. And every time I went to go to sleep, I'd be like, they could. Also,
yeah,
worth pointing out, I watched it at my friend Matthew's house.
He could have just killed you.
Well, I'm still friends with him now, but He is the kind of guy who could do that. But, like, he loved Scream.
Yeah.
The whole franchise, he absolutely loved it. His bedroom was a shrine to it, and I was staying over that night.
Right.
So we watched Scream 2.
Mm-hmm.
I was really scared, and then I was sleeping in a bed that literally above it had the costume that the killer wears hanging from the ceiling. So he had it hanging from the ceiling, so it looked like they were looming. Like the killer was looming over you.
Yeah. So he had that above his bed.
Above his own bed. So I was sleeping in that bed night. So, like, I literally had to sleep underneath the killer from the film I'd just seen. And also,
that is weird.
In Scream,
yeah,
it is not unlikely for that to be one of the scenes where, like, oh, it's just a little costume from about the killer we got hanging from the ceiling, and then that is the killer, actually, really. And then they stab you in the night. Yeah. So, like, as that was the first night I saw it, was hanging over me. And then every night I tried to go, because it was just all these horrible thoughts of, like, all the different murders that happened in the film, and, like, just all the people that this...
The beginning is one of the great... I think it's one of the great openings to a film. Scream 2 is a genuinely...
The cinema.
...horrifying...
Yeah.
...brilliant, scary sequence.
Yeah. But also with that as well, it's like, oh, like, no one will help you.
Yeah. And they all think it's part of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, there was that. So, and that's... I was just running over all the... Because also they're going, okay, so why did those two kill everyone? They're just, like, trying to go over it and trying to work it out. And going, oh, but she was acting so normal for the whole film. Mm. That lady was acting just really normal. And she was murdering these kids. Yeah. And, like, and it was, I just couldn't get out of my, I thought I literally was not sleeping. And I don't know how I eventually got out of it and was managed to, you know, I probably watched a really happy film and snapped myself out of it. But, like, I don't... Couldn't tell any of my friends.
Have you seen Scream 1? Have you never gone?
I have now.
Never revisited.
But I only watched it recently.
Right.
I think I've watched all of them.
Okay.
And I like, I've watched the Scream TV series on Netflix, which most people would tell you is a pile of shit. And
what would you say?
I think it is, but deliberately. But deliberately.
Go on.
Well, because
I've not seen it.
The films are making fun of horror films.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realise at the time when I was watching it. I thought it was just a genuine horror film. Yeah. But like the films are kind of making fun of horror films and stuff like that, and they're deliberately have bits that are badly acted and things like that. And that's what... The TV series have bits that are deliberately hammy and, like, over the top, and bits that are a bit parody, stuff like that. But, like, it stays really true to the films. Anyone who gets annoyed with this TV series, you know, well, if you like the films...
Yeah.
It's what this TV series... It's doing exactly what the film did. It's just doing it to the nth degree because it's also making fun of the film. Right. So it's doing that on top of it. But I quite enjoy it. It's just, like, something easy to watch.
You say easy. I mean, when you were 14, you couldn't sleep for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I couldn't sleep for 2 weeks. Also.
So now is it like a little... Like,
now it's pretty normal. Like, I can watch that kind of stuff now.
I can watch a series.
I'm a brave boy now.
Yeah.
For a while, it was just like films like that. The other film that scared me a lot was Hannibal. Right. Because that was the first film I'd seen where...
Someone ate a brain?
Yes, someone ate a brain. But also, like, a lot of the stuff in Hannibal that's really awful, you don't see it happen. So the stuff that you had to imagine, like... Because with that scene, for example... All the stuff in between, you go, well, hold on, so he drugs him. And then what does he do? He's just got him sitting there. He's just talking to him.
Yeah.
He's cut his fucking head open. And he's, like, feeding his own brain. That bit in particular was just, like, I couldn't stop thinking about it. How horrible it was. So I think these are all, like, pre the whole accepted death thing.
Okay.
Because it's suddenly being reduced to that. So it's like, if that was me and that happened to me, if someone did that to me, is that all I am? I'm just a piece of meat that can be manipulated. And then suddenly, if I'm drugged up enough for that, I'm that stupid that I'll just eat my own brain and I'll say shitty things to the people at the dinner table and I won't realise. When he throws the tea towel on his head, that's the worst for me, because he treats him like he's nothing.
Yeah.
At that point, he's just there with his brain exposed, drooling, but still alive.
Yeah.
And Hannibal's wheeled him into the kitchen and he just wipes his hands on the tea towel and just throws it on his head like it's a chair, it's just a stand, and it just covers his face and it's on his brain, and you're like, that's all I am.
Just a brain and a bit of meat.
I'm nothing. And it's that. And that scared me.
I once worked with an old man whose job in the, I don't remember what time, he worked for a studio in Hollywood, and his job was to come up, they made loads and loads of B-movie horror films, and his job was to come up with deaths. Ways of, like, cool deaths, scary deaths. And he said his favourite one that he came up with was they put a guy to sleep, they cut open the top of his skull so his brain's exposed, they wheel him in front of a mirror, and then they wake him up And when he wakes up, he sees himself and he goes, ah, and puts his hands to his head in shock and crushes his own brain. Puts his fingers through his brain. That was his best.
Having step. A think of that, having that, that's your job.
Yeah.
Think of that stuff. I just get worried about myself.
He was a lovely man, family man. What is the film that made you cry the most?
Pride.
I love Pride.
Yeah.
Love that film.
Love it. One of my favourite films of recent years.
Love it.
And I saw it
that more than, say, Saving Mr. Banks.
Well, I didn't watch Saving Mr. Banks, but, like, I cry at stuff that makes me feel, I guess, happy rather than sad. Although, I don't know.
Those of you who don't know, you might not know, Pride is a wonderful film about the miners in Wales joining forces with the gay community.
Yeah, so the gay community basically decided to support the miners because the miners... Because basically that... There's a scene at the beginning of the film where they're saying, we haven't been hassled for ages.
Yeah.
And we normally get loads of shit from the police all the time. And why is that not happening now? And it's because they're hassling somebody else. They're hassling the miners now. And so we can either just go, great.
Yeah.
Or we can get behind them and support them, even though they didn't support us and no one supported us. And that alone, for a little Christian boy, for somebody who's been raised, you just go, oh, it's so nice. And so first I watched it in the cinema, and I don't do cry in the cinema, so I kind of like was fine. But I loved it, and so I bought the DVD.
Right.
Which I don't really do any these days, but I bought the DVD, and I watched it on my own one night.
Mm.
And I honestly think I cried for the whole film.
Mm.
And at the end, the back of my head, the head muscles hurt, because I've been crying, so it'd been like my whole...
It was trying to produce more tears.
It all been wrinkled and just tensed for the whole film, and it genuinely... hurt, and I was trying not to cry because it was like that was hurting so much. And it was, there's so many scenes in it. There's scenes that most films would save just to the end, and it's every scene in Pride. So every scene in it is potentially the end of a film where they try and make you cry, and just all the way through.
My all-time favourite show that I saw at the on stage is Our House, the musical, which I went to see. My dad got us tickets for Boxing Day.
Yes.
And I thought, what the fuck is this shit? Fucking madness, this is going to be shit.
Yeah.
And I cried all the way throughout because it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It's such an amazing story. It's so beautifully done. And it's directed by Matthew Walkers. And when I saw Pride, I was like, this is the most joyful, beautiful film I've ever seen. And then I saw it at the end, directed by Matthew Walkers. I thought, of course it is. The man who made Our House.
I didn't know that, didn't I? I knew that about that musical.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just... I mean, the cast is amazing. The story is really... Weirdly, the only bit that doesn't make me cry is the bit where they really try and make you cry. So there's this one bit where everyone starts singing.
Yes.
They're in this village hall. And I can't remember what's just happened, but something bad has just happened. Like, you know, they've basically been told they're not going to get what they want or whatever it is. And a lady gets up and starts singing... And then everyone is singing together. And that's the only bit that doesn't make me cry, even though I'm sure that most people cry at that bit. But for some reason, I'm like, nah, you're trying to make me cry. Forget it, man. I saw this coming. But whereas everything else, it's just like, you're watching, like, you know, people, like, coming together and supporting each other. And people, like, coming over, you know, people coming out, people realising they've got AIDS. And, like, there's so much, like,
Dominic West does an amazing dance in it, and I remember thinking, as an actor, if I got the part and I was reading the script and it says, oh, by the way, you have to do a massive dance in front of a crowd of people, I'd be like, oh, shit. And he really goes for it.
He really goes for it. He does. And, like, there's that Billy Brown song at the end, Power in the Union.
No, I don't think this is a spoiler. What I found about Pride is it's such, for a film that's, you know, it could be a heavy subject, it's so joyful and it's so full of love and hope and wonder. But then the film ends and then it shows up like titles of where the people are now, kind of titles. And all the titles are so depressing. They're the saddest fucking titles.
Some of them are
okay. I don't think
one of them is very sad. But like it's...
You're like, you ended that film right before it all got
They do deal with that. But also there's plenty of sad stuff in the film. But like the fact that they make the main message about supporting each other and supporting your neighbours and like not, it's the whole kind of thing about, you know, not leaving people high and dry just because they're not fighting the same cause as you or whatever it is, like, you know, it's because they've got a different battle and it's not your battle, and actually just like still going, no, we've got the same oppressors or whatever, so like Yeah, it was great. And Paddy Considine's amazing in it. Mavis Staunton's amazing. Bill Nighy, like it's
Bill Nighy making sandwiches. Come on.
Well, that scene, yeah. When he's making the sandwich, that's one of the many scenes that made you cry. That is so well done.
Mm.
Yeah, there's too. It's a scene after scene that just destroys me, and I was an absolute wreck by the time I saw that film a second time.
Do you like? I don't mean this sort of weirdly. Do you like crying? Were you like, oh, this is a good thing?
I didn't cry for years. So I cried when I was, I think, 17. My cat died, and I cried,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't cry again
until Pride.
Well, not far off. Okay. Like, maybe until I was 30.
Wow.
Like, I just didn't cry. Couldn't cry. Wasn't trying to, necessarily, but, like, I was like, I just don't... I guess that's the thing, I just don't cry.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And then...
I felt that way until I saw Saving Mr. Banks.
Right, and then that was it.
I'm doing 20 years.
Yeah.
You seem like a man of principle. And so, the next question I have for you is... What is the film that you love unashamedly, but that is bad, that is certainly critically reviled? People say, this film is bad, but you're like, fuck you, this film's amazing.
Final Destination 5.
Lovely choice. Yeah. Is that the roller coaster one?
No, it's not the roller coaster one.
Car one?
It's the final one. It's the final, final destination.
Final destination.
Yeah, yeah. It was 3D at the cinema.
FFD. FFD 3D.
Yeah. What a film.
Talk to me.
I love all the Final Destination films.
Yeah, great film.
And what I love about them is that it's essentially the same comedy sketch over and over again, and you know what the punchline's going to be every time. So just go, here's a bunch of sketches.
Yeah.
And at the end, they're going to die. So at the end, the main character in the sketch is going to die, and you know that, and the laughs are... all the different ways that they could possibly die, and then at the end we kill them in a way that you don't suspect, and it's just funny.
So it's like the Fast Show, it's just catchphrase comedy. You know what the punchline is, it's just how are they going to get to but Desmond Bum?
Somehow trying to reinvent it every single time. And I think it's brilliant. And by the time they get to Final Destination 5, they fully know that's all this is.
Right.
So they don't really bother with the plot.
What's the big thing, the premonition death? At the beginning, in fact, is it the driving with a log on the motorway?
No, so
or is the bad...
although that's like a that's another one that's like quite an early one.
Okay,
it is. I'm pretty sure it's because now I'm worried that I'm getting them mixed up. I'm pretty sure I'm not. It's a bridge collapses and they're all on this bus.
Okay,
and they somehow survive it. So yeah,
that's quite small for them. That's quite a small.
It's set. Pretty huge.
Okay, it's a big bridge.
The bridge collapsing. It is a big bridge.
And it's got lots of cars on the bridge. And
loads of cars.
Okay.
Everyone's dying.
Okay.
It's really fucked.
Okay.
And, like, someone gets, like, boiling tar poured on them.
Why? I kind of want you to spoil this, so don't listen if you don't want it spoiled, but if it's the final destination, do they cure death? How do they stop it? How is it the final one?
They do not cure death.
So
and here's the thing, and I know what you're going to say when I tell you this, and I did not do this deliberately, but it is not the final one. It reveals it happened before the first one.
It was the first.
And it was the first, and it triggers the whole thing. That's what's quite...
That's cool.
What's quite great about it is that even the people who hate it and say it's rubbish go, credit where it's due. It's a really good twist, because you don't realise until the end, oh, they've not been using modern technology, this was set before that... But you don't realise it for the whole film. You're just like, you don't realise any of that. And then you realise, oh, this was before the first one.
That's what they did... my favourite sort of not loved horror series is Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
And Paranormal Activity, the marked ones, where they really went off-piste.
Right.
The end is he sort of has accidentally become a ghost kind of thing, like he's gone through a dimension where he can't be seen, and he walks through a door into the first Paranormal Activity. Right. And the big scary noises in the house are him just walking around trying to be heard.
Nice.
It's great.
It is great.
Give me the shivers.
It's really cool. But like, also, I saw it on the... So, my first ever solo show at Edinburgh Festival, which any comic who's done Edinburgh will tell you that the debut show is you're not really prepared for how it's going to make you feel.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel more anxious than you thought you would, more stressed. Your ego takes a real beating. You have a lot of doubt. And it's a quite stressful month. And at the end of the month, I booked... a train back a little bit too late. So maybe, like, I had a whole day
awful.
In Edinburgh and nothing awful to do, and everyone else had gone home, apart from me, Tom Rosenthal, and I think it was Lee and Paul from Late Night Gimfight.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if any of the others, maybe Matt was there as well. But we all decided we were going to go and see Final Destination 5 at the cinema.
Lovely.
We were, let's just go and see that, and we've got nothing to do. And we went there, and watching, after a month of being at a festival where we're all obsessed over making these perfect shows that will impress the critics and impress the awards panel and all this kind of stuff, and then you go and see a film that's literally gone, we don't care.
Yeah.
We don't care about what any of you say about this. We know this is fun. We're just going to have a load of fun with this film. And we're now putting it in 3D so that you can... really, also, a 3D film where I was glad it was in 3D, where it's not, I'm just sitting there going, yeah. Oh yeah, they've added a lot of depth to it, so it actually things seem further away.
Yeah, who cares about that? Stick it in your face.
I want it in my face. All the 3D films are in my face. I want to see, you know, the bridge fall apart, and everything's, you know, exploding out at me.
In my face.
Yeah.
It was, not away from my face.
Yeah, well, one of them, literally...
I'm already sat at the back.
All these metal rods slide off of a lorry and just go through someone, and they all come right at you.
Oh, I'd love that film.
It's great. So, like, it was just such a good film to watch and go, oh, yeah, you know what? When I'm in the audience, I just want to enjoy myself and have fun. And
that's
and
why your second Edinburgh show had a lot of you just pointing into the audience's face.
I was pointing in their face and killing them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my favourite show you did. Okay, the next thing I want to know then is, what is the film that has the most meaning to you? Not because you love the film per se, but because of the circumstances in which you saw it. For example, first date with someone where you fell in love with them or whatever. Yeah. What's the film, the experience of watching that film that is your...
So, this is one of my favourite films as well. So it's Boy, which is a film by Taika... Who people will know from, he did Thor Ragnarok, but he also did...
What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows, and...
The wonderful...
The Wilder People, but like...
Hunt for the Wilder
People. For the Wilder People, which is great. And Eagle vs. Shark was his first film. Boy was his second one, but based on like a short film we'd done before Eagle vs. Shark.
I have not seen
Boy. Boy is one of my favourite films ever.
Okay.
And I watched it, was the first time I went to New Zealand, and I am in love with that country.
Huh.
And... some of that is probably because my ex-girlfriend is from there.
Okay.
And so, like, I spent a lot of time there. But what's nice is that I know that, you know, my relationship with that country and my relationship with her are two different things. And,
That's good.
You know, I do know that. And I do feel like, you know, for a while I thought...
My ex-girlfriend, New Zealand.
I thought it's just connected together. Like, it's just because of her that I like it so much. Right. And then, like, I went there after the breakup and I was like, oh, no, I just love... Which is lovely as well, to go
That's
back, go back and go... Brilliant. I love everything about this country. It's so great. And I was really lucky to go out with her and have it that she... because she was really proud of where she came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to spend a lot more time, like, you know, immersed in that when I was over there with her and meeting her family. And like, there's so much in that film. I really love it. The first time I saw it was when... it's the first time I went to New Zealand. I just had a... this is a different breakup. It sounds like I'm always getting... I'm always having breakups. But I just had a breakup. And I went to New Zealand. So I went to New Zealand like a week after having a breakup.
Right.
I'd never been before. I was going for the comedy festival. And it was just like exactly what I needed. I was very lucky. So, you know, there's loads of times when you're really lucky to have this job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the times of like, how fortunate that this is my job and that I get to just go on a plane. Yeah. And I went there and I just had this amazing time discovering this new place. It felt really good. And then... someone organised, someone called Heidi O'Loughlin, she sorted out a boy, she knew most of us hadn't seen Boy.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, we're all going to watch it this afternoon at the Classic, which is the venue. And she'd like sorted out like a big TV, got out and bought Boy. And she was like, we're going to watch it at this time and come along if you want to watch it. And so I went along and it was unlike any film I'd seen before, really. It was a really beautiful film that makes you care about all of the characters, but never really puts them in too much danger. And yet you still feel worried for them for the whole thing. It doesn't really, like... it's no huge peril, but it's just quite sad anyway. Their circumstances are quite sad. Mm. And so you're just with them every step of the way, and it's a very... it's a very funny film in parts as well, but, like, it's really one of a kind. And that was, like, the first time I saw it. It made me feel really... I'd already kind of, like, growing to love New Zealand anyway. and that really locked it in of like, I love this, because it's such a New Zealand film, but not in a way that, there were some films that have been made,
it's not prohibitive.
But the one that with Jake the Mus in that everyone talks about, which is like the first, what is it called? It's a horrible film about domestic violence.
Oh, yeah, Once a Warrior.
Yes.
Yes.
And people associate those kind of gritty films of New Zealand a lot of the time. Like, has made films that are quite gritty and horrible and often don't really celebrate the country much. Whereas Taika's films, I feel, really celebrate New Zealand and what's great about it. And even though Pride is the film that I cry at the most, Boy is getting there, and Boy is the fastest I cry at a film. Right. Boy, I cry at the first line immediately. But the fact it opens, and it's a close-up of Boy.
Right.
So, like, it's just his face...
Boy, is Boy a boy?
Yeah. Okay. His face fills the screen, and he says, Kia ora, and then I cry immediately. Because it's such a... The opening is just like, he's smiling, and he's saying something that I've only heard people say in New Zealand. They probably say it other places. But, like, it's so such a an opening of just them being proud of New Zealand immediately, which, especially because there's a bit of a culture in New Zealand for you've got to be humble and not proud of yourself and stuff like that.
Right.
And so, well, maybe not proud of yourself, but not big-headed and not arrogant. But that opening is just so proud of their country and a bit of their... And it just immediately makes me cry straight away. I love it. And, yeah, that first viewing was just a very special thing. I feel like it's a...
And it sort of helped you heal in your breakup?
It probably helped me heal, yeah, both breakups that I mentioned. So, like, yeah, that first one, definitely, because it was like, I just needed to get away, go somewhere else, and then realise there's this amazing place full of amazing people, and, like, and just having that experience was great. And then the other relationship where, yeah, she was from New Zealand, because I didn't have any hard feelings towards her, she's brilliant. And then a film like that kind of just reminds me but yeah, she's brilliant, and that feels good.
When when my first girlfriend I was with for 3 years,
yeah,
and when she broke up with me, the day she broke up with me, we had tickets to a preview of Requiem for a Dream, and because we'd really liked the trailer and we'd liked Darren Aronofsky's last film,
of course, yeah.
And she broke up with me, and I was in my room sort of crying and I was sad, and then I thought, I'm not going to miss out on this. Like, I could stay here and cry all night, but I've got a ticket to this film.
Yeah.
And so I went to see a preview of Requiem for a Dream. Tell you what, right, cheered me up.
Yeah, did it?
But I felt much better.
Well, at least that's not me.
No, I thought, I think Requiem for a Dream's got a happy ending, but...
No.
That's my theory.
No, one of the saddest endings, famously, one of the saddest endings in all of cinema.
Because I feel like at the end of Requiem for a Dream, everyone's life's going to get better. Everyone's life's going to get better where it ends. It's like
Pride. Because it can't get any worse.
It's like the opposite of Pride.
Because it
Pride ends and you go, oh, fuck, you hear what happened next.
Yeah.
Requiem for a Dream goes, he's clean now, he's going to be all right, he's going to get out of prison, he's going to be fine. She's in a mad coma where she's mad and she's happy and she thinks on TV. He's lost his arm, he's going to be fine, and he's going to go and get her, and they're going to be in love and be back together. It's a lovely ending.
I don't know how you have got that from that.
Speaking of sexy films, you're a very sexual animal.
Yep.
What's the film you think is the sexiest? What's the film that gave you the most trouble in your pants?
Yeah, so it's not the film I think is the sexiest now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what film that would even be. I don't really watch films a lot and think, that's so sexy.
Right, not since The Rescue of Dan Ender.
No, Brett. But the only thing I've watched and I've been like, this is so sexy, was American Pie. Because...
You love pie?
Because of how old I was. I was 13.
Oh, something yeah, like well, there's a, well, except the sort of sexy in American Pie is like revenge porn, assault, isn't it? What happens? They set up cameras and make her film her.
13, I'm not intellectual enough to know any of that. Yeah. I'm just like, oh my God, there's boobs in a film.
Yeah.
Like, there was never that. I've never seen that before in a film.
No, and she's beautiful. She's absolutely beautiful.
So there was that. There's the hot mum who guy gets to sleep with. That's really sexy. Oh, genuinely. In that film, I was like, I would like to have sex with everyone right now. This film has made me think sex is the best thing ever.
Is that the first time you thought that? 13?
Probably.
At 13?
Well, no, I don't know. Like, I remember, I've spoken about this on other podcasts before, but my awakening was watching a cartoon.
Mm.
I think it was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon about two eggs. and a boy egg and a girl egg walking around the kitchen, and the boy egg fancied the girl egg, and they're both quite innocent looking little eggs, and the girl egg falls into a pot of boiling water.
Jesus.
But then she comes out and she's really sexy, like Sandy D at the end of
Grease. Sexy egg.
Yeah, she
was like an egg in a leather jacket.
So yeah, suddenly she's like that, and she's really mean, and I was like, I want to bang that egg. But like,
mean egg. You wanted the mean one.
I wanted the mean one, which explains why I'm 33 and single still. It's because I've always gone for the wrong girls.
Well, your story's ended up.
But like, but like, that was the first time I was like, oh, I think.
Well, the thing is, you went from eggs to pie. I mean, there's a clear trajectory.
Eggs to pie.
You were pies in myself.
Yeah, pies. Yeah. I was just interested in the ingredients of the pie.
Eggs.
Yeah. Clearly, that's the kind of stuff I should be watching. Great British Bake Off.
Great British Bake Off was fucking
don't go anywhere near me. Absolutely.
That's why you've never been invited on
this. Paul Hollywood, you lucky son of a gun.
Okay. Thank you. That's a good answer. Okay, this one. The question is, what is the film that you most related to? What film have you watched where you've thought, that's me, that? Whether it's the character or the vibe of the film or...
Yes, now.
You can be as arrogant as you want, or whatever. What's the film
I think? I think I've maybe got this one wrong.
Okay, go on.
But it's a film... Maybe it's not that I relate to it.
No, it
relates to how I thought about stuff. So, before the comedy, I was in a load of bands.
Yeah.
And the aim was never to be necessarily, like...
seen or heard.
Massive or famous. Yeah. It was to do something significant within music, make a difference. And always felt like... People would always, like... You're never going to get anywhere. You know, you're told a lot, especially in Kevin, you're not going to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to happen. And you think, just trying and just doing it is enough. And that's what, kind of what I tell myself a lot. But it's only me telling myself that. I didn't really have anyone else reinforcing that and going, it's enough that you're doing it. And you probably, who knows? You might write a song and then no one hears it, but then 10 years' time, someone picks it up and likes it. It was never that, but I was trying to say to myself, that might happen. If you're doing something that you really like, other people will find it eventually and they'll like it. And there's a film called Fish Story.
It's a lesbian film.
No?
No, that's Go Fish, sorry.
But, of course you've heard of that one and not this one. But
Fish Story, go on, what is it?
So it's a film about, a band.
Yes.
Who are recording a single. And they find out while they're recording it, or it might even be an album, but they find out while they're recording it that they're getting dropped from the label and that this is the last album and that they're done. And they got nothing, this band, besides this. And they're splitting up. And they record this final song and he's using lyrics that he got from a book that he read, which is a book that no one's heard of and that, like, never did any business. And I think there's only, like, I can't remember in the film now, but if there's like even only one copy of it, he's got hold of it. It's like something ridiculous. There's this story behind this book. He meets his name, and while he's singing it, he makes a speech to the record label, kind of saying how much he doesn't care about that they're dropping them. And then when the record label release the album, they cut his speech out, but they leave it. There's just silence. So there's a song, and then there's this block of silence, and then the song starts again. And then it's like a little kind of cult album, and people have theories about the silence and that it's like a haunted thing or something like that. And it's all like through different times. So the next kind of time period is someone going home, it's kind of quite a weedy guy who gets pushed around by a lot of people, driving home on his own, and this song's in the tape deck, and the silence comes on, and during the silence he hears a scream, and he stops and realises there's a woman getting assaulted, and he goes up to try and help her. I think it just like fades out on that and you don't really see what happens, and then there's another scene that's like on a boat and these terrorists take over the boat, and then one of the passengers is this boy who just is like a martial arts master, like an indestructible kid, just takes them all on his own, destroys them, and one of the other passengers is this girl who was asleep and he kind of saves her life basically, and then she goes to school, does really well, becomes like a genius mathematician, and then there's an asteroid headed for Earth that's going to kill everybody in the future.
Is this a Japanese film?
Yes.
I do know.
And then this is the whole plot of the film, but you had to come tell it.
I feel like your mum going, how far into the
future? Yeah, I feel exactly, this is exactly what I was like as a kid. But then she's basically the mathematician who figures out how to stop the asteroid. So if that band, because also
the band that saved the world.
Also, the kid who's like the kung fu master, the martial arts master, is the child of the guy and the woman in the by the side of the road. So the guy who saves that woman, They go out, and then he trains the kid because he doesn't want him to be a wimp like him.
Why is it called Fish Story?
The book is called Fish Story.
Okay.
That he reads, and then the song is called Fish Story that they write. So it's kind of about, if you do anything creative, it's taking it to the nth degree and going, you could be a little shitty punk band who no one listens to, and you save the world.
I think, I like that you relate to that, but I would say, if you want to be sort of a creative person that no one sees, and then you'll discover many years later, don't put yourself on Netflix.
Well, my attitude changed a bit.
Okay.
No, it's not, you know, it's still like, it's basically the whole thing about, it's just worth it to try, you know. Just doing that. It's positive, whatever you're doing. If you're being creative, it's having a positive effect.
And you saw this when you were in your band?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, and it just takes it to its, like, it takes that theory to its most preposterous limits. And it's a bit Tarantino-esque, the film, and there's this great montage at the end where they just show everything in order. So they show the guy struggling to get his book made and how it eventually leads to the world being saved.
I love that.
And it's just quite, it's like that and School of Rock both make me feel like, just worth it to try and be creative. That's all it is. It's like, it's enough to just try.
School of Rock is one of my top five of all time.
One of the best films. So great.
Perfect film.
So amazing. Yeah.
What's interesting about Fish Story is actually, it sounds a bit like Final Destination in terms of this leads to this, leads to this, leads to this. But it's the opposite, leads to saving lives.
Yeah. Good at the end.
You're like a mousetrap.
Yeah, and music will save us all.
Yeah.
And that's, I still believe that.
You believe that? Yeah.
I mean, music it gets me through anything. It's great. It's amazing. Magical.
I believe that.
Yeah.
A side note then, what's the film with the best soundtrack? You can only have one.
I like a lot of films that John Bryan does the music for.
Yes.
And
Huckabees were my favourite album.
Yeah, I think Huckabees was nearly my film that I loved at the time and don't now. It still is a bit too much of its time, and also David Russell's made much better films since, but I Heart Huckabees is a great soundtrack of, maybe that would be it, or...
We can come back to that. What film do you think is objectively, it might not be your favourite film, but that you are like, technically, that is the greatest film of all time. In the same way critics usually say Citizen Kane or Vertigo. It might not be your favourite, but you go, fair enough, that is the greatest film ever made.
Oh, okay. So I interpret this one to be my favourite one.
You know, and something like Schindler's List. Schindler's List is a great film, but I don't think you're going to go, well, let's put Schindler's List on.
Sure.
It's Friday night.
Well, it's like, I think if I was going to say who the greatest director of all time was, I'd say Stanley Kubrick.
Okay. So what do you think is his greatest film then, I guess?
I think his greatest film is probably the only one that I didn't like all the way through.
Which is what?
I wouldn't say it's a great film, but I'd say it's the one that I would say, like if someone was saying, will show me the greatest film of all time.
Yeah, aliens come, you can only show them one, but they want to know, what's the greatest film? What is this medium of film?
Like, I might, but then I didn't like it.
That's okay.
2001?
Great.
Like,
great choice.
I mean, I'll probably show them that, but I'll go, listen, aliens, before I watch this, full disclosure, I like the bit with the monkeys at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I really love the Howl story.
Yeah.
And everything else, I'm going to fast forward it.
Okay. And they're going,
it's
weird, you're saying it's this.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I'm not so keen on this one.
Okay, this is a very long... I wish the film was just the Howl thing. And I would like it more. But then, if it was just the Howl thing for the whole film, I might not show it to people as an example of his... Like, yeah, because the whole thing is like... You still get to the end and go, well, that's impressive. That's amazing that you did that. It's incredible.
Also that you did it before...
Yeah.
People went to the moon and shit.
Yeah. Before he was involved.
After they saw that, they'd be like, yeah, he could do a moon landing.
He did the moon landing and then put clues in The Shining that he'd done the moon landing, apparently.
I know all about that.
Yeah.
Before we get to the final question, one bonus question, and I don't want to be too negative, but if we could quickly go with, what do you think is the worst film? What is the worst film you've ever seen?
Premonition, starring Sandra Bullock. On paper, this sounds fun.
Yeah.
She lives a week in the wrong order.
That sounds great.
And her husband dies.
Yeah.
So day one, her husband dies in a lorry accident.
Mm-hmm. Sounds up your street so far.
Yeah. And then she wakes up the next morning.
Yeah.
And it's his life. But it's earlier in the week. And she wakes up again. It's the funeral. So she's figuring out how to save him. And that sounds great.
Sounds like Final Destination.
It is awful.
It's like Final Destination.
It's so boringly written.
Right.
It doesn't work. The ending is ridiculous that she ends up being the one who kills him in the car.
Oh, wow.
But, like...
That's so good.
It's absolutely awful. It's so bad. I would have walked out the cinema, but when I saw it, I couldn't really afford to go to the cinema very often, so I was like, well...
Take it.
Here I am, I've got to watch it. It was absolutely horrendous.
Do you ever walk out? I'll tell this story on podcast. You and I think one of the significant times where I made a decision about what I think about art and stuff happened with you, because you and I went on a date to see the film Snowtown.
Yes.
Snowtown, which is about the true story of a serial killer in Australia. And it is such a depressing, bleak, horrible film that, although I think technically it's very well made, I hate that film. I think it's... I don't know why it exists. I don't know what it's for.
You've told me many times. And there was
we were sat there an hour in, and we'd paid £20 a ticket, and it was like a Saturday night. And about an hour into an already horrendously bleak film, one brother wrestles his other brother to the floor and starts raping him.
Yeah.
And the camera just stays in the corridor just watching a boy be raped by his brother.
Yeah.
And I turned to James and I said, that's entertainment. Because I thought, what are we doing here? Why are we watching this?
And it
made me realise that my big theory, which is that drama without jokes, without humour in it, is bad art. It means you have not looked at life. You've not understood life. Because when you read true stories of the Holocaust, people in concentration camps, they made jokes. Like, that. There are moments of humour, even in the darkest shit. And if your film doesn't have a fucking joke in it, you have failed at...
I wouldn't say doing that.
It's bad art.
Right.
Look at fucking Manchester by the Sea. Tragic, heartbreaking, hilarious, loads of jokes.
There's still some jokes in there. I mean, you have to dig deep to find them. But, like, there's still some jokes in Manchester by the Sea.
Anyway.
But Manchester by the Sea has... Also, I would say, it has relatable stuff in it. Snowtown doesn't have a bit where you go, oh yeah, that's like... Unless you've been through any of that horrific shit, it's not... And even then, if you have, it's not a relatable thing in a good way. You know, like in Manchester by the Sea, you can go, okay, like, even though I've not been through any of this stuff, I can see how, like, as human beings, you know, empathise with them. Go, oh, imagine that happening to you. I can see how he feels like that. And her, she's in this awful position, and what is she? And you really feel for them all. I mean, Snowtown, it's like, this is just horrible.
Yeah, it was really like, what's horrible the
thing
this
after horrible thing, and I have to know that it really happened.
Yeah,
and
the world is horrible, as you don't.
Yeah, really awful, really awful. But at least that it got a reaction out of me that I was like, oh, that's so horrible, and it really messed with me.
Mm.
Premonition was like, no. I just hate it. It's just rubbish. It's boring. It's badly written, badly acted. It's ridiculous. And also, I hate it when people take what is quite a good idea.
It's great. You genuinely completely
hoof it over the bar and ruin it. So, like, yeah.
Okay. So, to end on a more positive, I'm sorry for being briefly negative there. So, this is the final question is not what is the greatest film, what is the film that you, I guess, it depends on your definition. I'd say this is your favourite film. What's the film that you could watch the most forever, or have watched the most, and I'm very happy if I said to you, oh, that film's on, you'd be like, oh, great, let's watch it again.
Sure. Why would you say this is our favourite, this is your favourite film, if it's the one you could watch over and over? Because I don't think this is my favourite film. It's one of my favourite films.
Go on.
So this is Spinal Tap is my answer.
Lovely.
For the film I could watch over and over again.
Great answer.
Because I have watched it over and over again, and I know I can do it. It's the film I've seen the most out of any film.
Right.
The last time I saw it was at the cinema, because they was doing the screening. And it's the only time I've been in a cinema where the laughs were all at the start of each scene. So literally the scene would open and the audience would laugh because we all knew what was going to happen. Yeah. I mean, we weren't necessarily laughing at the jokes, but, like, you know, as soon as...
You were laughing at remembering the jokes.
You go, oh, I can't wait for this, because it would open and it'd be his hands playing the piano. Mm. You go, they're going to do Lick My Love Pub. This is so funny. It's going to be that scene. And so, like, every bit of that film, every line is funny. You could just completely get lost in all of it. Like, I watched it for the first time, didn't think it was funny. Me and my brother watched it. I was like, why are people talking about that film? And then we started quoting it, even though we didn't like it. And we were like, well, if we're quoting it, maybe we'd watch it again. And we watched it again. It was the best film I'd ever seen. So funny. And then I had it on video. We taped it off TV. And I just went round all of my friends' houses, like, you've got to watch it. And made all my friends watch it.
And did they not like it the first time you made them watch
no,
it?
No, they quite liked it, actually. Well, some of them did, some of them didn't. But my friend Jake and two of my friends really liked it.
Okay.
And so they wanted to also show it to other people. So it was always watching with people. And then I went to college to do a music course and met my friend Graham there, who I'm still friends with now, who I was in loads of bands with. But his favourite film was also Spinal Tap. So we were quoting it all the time. So all the time, it just kept on. If there was a...
Where was this at college?
Northampton. The fact that we did a BTEC course in music practice. It was
So many women broke up with you.
Yeah, sure. Well, no one has broken up with me. That. I didn't have a proper girlfriend at that point. Yeah. I'd never, you know, but like...
2 minutes busy masturbating to eggs.
Yeah, thank you. If we were ever in a music shop,
yeah,
we had to go up to the guitars and go, still the old tag on it. Still the old tag, never even played it. I like having to do stuff like that all the time.
Right.
And it's a film I enjoy watching the most over and over again.
So what's your... So you said that isn't your favourite. What's your favourite film? And then I guess we haven't asked that.
Yeah.
To end with, what is your absolute...
My favourite film is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, that is so your film.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Did you even have to ask? Yeah, surely you know that's my favourite film.
It's got the John Bryan... soundtrack?
John Bryan does a soundtrack, sure.
It's about a breakup.
Yeah.
It's sad.
But it's positive.
But it's funny.
It's funny. It's positive. It looks beautiful.
Looks beautiful. It's whimsical. It's
innovative.
Yeah.
It's also
got a very mismatched couple.
Yeah. Also what I like about it, so I like everyone who's involved in that film.
Yeah.
And I really like Michelle Gondry and I really like Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah.
But that film is just the perfect marriage for both of them. In that I don't think either of them have done it. I liked Synecdoche, New York.
Love that film.
I really liked it. But I think the things that excite me the most with it, so I do like films that are really, you know, difficult.
Yeah.
And that not everyone's going to like and stuff like that. But my favourite films are ones that manage to be innovative and yet accessible.
Yeah.
And that film is so creative, so inventive and original and yet relatable, accessible to people. You know, people who like mainstream films can like that film, you know, and enjoy it. And I don't think there's anything about it that I don't like. Also, Jim Carrey.
Love Jim Carrey.
He's amazing in that. I like him in loads of films, but like, I'd watched him growing up. You know, my first introduction to him was when I was a kid, and it was all of his, you know, more wacky, like, big, you know, I mean, when he properly blew up with Dumb and Dumber and The Mask and Ace Ventura, and they were all like back to back. And he was great.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved him as a kid, like, one of my favourite actors, because I was watching comedy films all the time. So then to be an adult or in my 20s and see him in this film that I really relate to, but it's this guy who I've grown up with and love anyway, and then see him and now he's doing a film I can really relate to on a different level is quite special. Because definitely when I watched it, around that time was the time when I used to be watching films like Garden State and stuff like that, and thinking those kind of female characters were the kind of people I wanted to be with. And so she kind of fit into that, but then you watch it as an adult and you go, oh, she's not that. She is literally him, Charlie Kaufman, saying, those characters are bullshit.
Yeah.
Because she's literally saying, I'm not going to solve anything for you. I'm not, and all this, and like, going, oh yeah, she's great. Like, even now, you can watch it and be like...
I've realised it's the only Charlie Kaufman film that's sort of optimistic. It's the most optimistic of his films. I think most of them are pretty... I love them, and I think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I think he's... I find, what's the one... The first one, being
John Malkovich.
It's one of the saddest films.
Yeah.
That's the Matilda of Charlie Kaufman. It's such a dark, sad ending.
Yeah. Although, also the ending really makes me laugh when Charlie Sheen goes out of his house because their nicknames for each other are just hilarious.
I don't remember.
He goes, Malcatraz. And then he goes, Machine. Machine is such a deliberately rubbish nickname for him. Like, they deliberately wrote a bad nickname.
That's great.
Yeah, I kind of got in. I mean, it's the first Troy Kaufman film I saw was Adaptation.
Yeah,
there's a lot of nods to being John Malkovich, but you think you'd need to watch that film first. But I loved it. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And so I wanted to watch everything this guy had done. And I didn't really know Michelle Gondry very well. But like, going to see Eternal Sunshine and being like, oh, that's
your favourite.
That's what I wanted. I always want to watch that now.
Okay, James, these have all been excellent answers. I just found out that when you died in the quicksand,
yeah,
you swallowed a lot of it and it made your corpse bloat so much that there's only room for one of these films in your coffin.
Yeah.
So which of the films that you've discussed are you going to take with you forever? That's the only film you're going to have in heaven.
I can watch it.
You can watch it and you can show it to people in heaven, but you can't take all of it. It's going to be the only film in heaven. So is it going to be Turner Chancellor's Bottle of Mine, or is it going to be Spinal Tap? Or Final Destination 5 Final 3D.
Oh, man, those are good picks. Yeah. I think it's going to be Eternal Sunshine. I've got to take that with me. It'd be the one that I'd want to...
I've
been watching it over and over. Spinal Tap, I can watch it every day and it's fine, but Eternal Sunshine is the one that I'd want to show it to people, have a bit of a break, but then I want
to
really...
Yeah, be like, guys, there are other things to do up here than just watching films.
I want to watch it again.
If I brought Spinal Tap, we'd just be watching over and over.
Yeah.
Let's do some gardening.
Yeah. And also, I think there's always things... I do always, every time I watch Eternal Sunshine, spot something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it'd be that. It'd have to be that. I feel bad that I haven't. I just want to say, for the record, my favourite director is Wes Anderson. And now we can move on. I feel bad I've chosen none of his films.
Oh, he's your favourite director?
My favourite director.
Have you seen None of Dogs?
Not yet.
But, what was he like that?
Yeah, couldn't feel it like him that much. I mean, maybe I'm even going off of him, but like, I think he's my favourite director. And I don't speak about films and not mention him at any point.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I couldn't really find a category that you fit into. With
your coffin is currently being lowered into the ground. You're going, but what about Wes Anderson?
Wes Anderson, so you know, even though a lot of people didn't like Dark City Unlimited, I really liked it. See
ya. I could be bothered to watch Adam Dogs, but I'm sure it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
James. I'm going to let you go to heaven.
Thank you.
You've earned it. And may I say, thank you so much for being the podcast. May I say, as we end it, that you are the eternal sunshine, the spotless mind of people, in that you are whimsical and original and inventive and brilliant, but also accessible, and people can get you.
And a bit like Jim Carrey.
And a bit like Kate Winslet.
Oh, yeah.
You're not who they say you are. Thank you so much.
I'm not the soul of you guys.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Brett.
Really enjoyed this. You're a lovely boy. Stop banking over eggs. Good day.
So that was episode one. I hope you enjoyed it. I'd like to thank Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network for all the help they've put into making this happen. I'd like to thank Buddy Peace for editing and producing it. I'd like to thank Acast for hosting it. I'd like to thank Adam Richardson for the amazing graphics and Lisa Lydon for the amazing photography. You can find her work on Lisa Lala on Instagram. Please come back next week for more films to be buried with. And thank you for listening very much. Please subscribe and like and whatever it is you're meant to do with these things. Thank you so much. I really hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate your time. And please be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.